from Vision Australia Radio. It's time to open the cellar door and uncork a classic on Heard It Through the Grapevine.
Hello, hello, hello. I'm Michael Hintz, the velvety voice of Vino, with another Heard It Through the Grapevine on Vision Australia Radio and coming to you nationally through the Community Radio Network. And it's hello from my producer, Lloyd Shirley. Today we'll meet the talented, energetic, irrepressible, gee, that's a hard word to say, winemaker Andrew Thomas from Andrew Thomas Wines at Pocolbin in the Hunter Valley. Very much a go-to man in the Hunter, Andrew specialises in crafting some fine Hunter Valley Semillon and Shiraz. But first, my wine of the week is a 2014 Pachamama Riesling. 6% alcohol by volume, screw cap, made by Nina Stocker from 100% Central Victorian and Upper Goulburn fruit. Apart from small, pristine lots of Riesling at Mitchelton, Tobilk and Fowles have some planted, and of course young Sam Plunkett at Wines by Sam, he's also got some up at the Strathbogie Ranges. Long thought Ngambi / Strathbogie Ranges produces some top Riesling fruit. As epitomised by Don Lewis's Tower and Roses, Lewis Riesling. Now, Pachamama Riesling has all the attributes of the Strathbogie Ranges, Upper Goulburn. It's crisp with pronounced lime and honey aromatics, redolent with citrus blossom and grapefruit notes on both the nose and the palate, with traces of lemongrass and minerality backed by a fine, steely acid, leading to a long, dry, lingering finish. Good drinking now, but well-structured and complex enough to benefit from good cellaring. An excellent value-for-money wine. Incidentally, this Pachamama 2014 Riesling won a bronze medal at last year's Royal Melbourne Show, as did the Pachamama 2014 Pinot Gris, and their 2012 Pinot Noir, and their 13 Shiraz. They did pretty well. Now let's meet Andrew Thomas. Andrew, welcome to Grapevine.
Good morning, Michael. How are you?
I'm well. And you're well?
Very well, thanks.
Survived the harvest up there and the rains and got your fruit in?
We're actually picking the very last parcel of Shiraz today.
Oh, well, look, thank you for joining us at such a busy time. I appreciate that.
No problem at all.
Now, firstly, how many hectares under vine have you and what's your total annual production?
I actually have 0 hectares under vine.
So you get it from growers?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, I've been sourcing all my fruit from local independent growers since I launched my own label.
Yep.
Look, I obviously deal with the same guys each year because, I'm fortunate enough to have access to arguably some of the best sites in the Hunter Valley.
Mm-hmm.
So I go back I don't have a contract, but... the wine industry, a handshake agreement sometimes better than a contract.
It used to be, and it's still that way in the Hunter. You're pretty much in the handshake,
You know, we have a good relationship with all these growers, and I take their fruit each year, the idea being that when we pick their vineyards, it comes into the winery, and it's all kept separate, and at the end of the day, those individual blocks are bottled as single vineyard wine.
Yep.
So my production at the moment is about 8,000 cases a year, which sounds a lot, but it still makes me a relatively small producer.
Yep. And is there one dominant terroir from the vineyards you get your something in common, or do the terroirs and micro subclimates vary from vineyard to vineyard, block to block?
I guess the main difference between all the wines in my range, and as you alluded to before, my business strategy is just to specialise in the two signature varieties of the Hunter Valley. So I only produce Semillon and Shiraz, a few different examples of each vintage.
Yes.
And essentially the main difference between each of the wines is based on terroir and microclimate, but having said that, you could generalise to a certain extent by saying that generally the Semillons are grown on the sandy alluvial flats. That's where they're best suited here in the Hunter Valley, and the Shiraz is grown on sort of the heaviest loamy and clay soils on the slopes and tops of the hills.
Yep. Now, how many vintages under your belt to date? since you've been making wine, and what are the key lessons you've learnt along the way that sort of stick in your mind?
I just worked out the other day that this is my 29th consecutive Hunter Valley vintage.
And people don't realise you don't get many chances at it. It's only once a year, isn't it?
That's right. You only get to produce one wine a year from each block. So, you know, it takes a long time to really get a handle on, what you're doing, let alone, working with these individual blocks.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess to that end as well, you never stop learning. You know, every vintage throws up, slightly different conditions. And, you can make comparisons with what you've seen in previous years. But, you know what, I don't think I've ever seen two vintages that I can say, they're nailed. They're exactly, this vintage is exactly like that other vintage because, just nature throws up different challenges for us and it's a continual learning process.
Mm.
But what have I learned along the way? Well, plenty, really.
Yep. Anything sticks out, you know?
Well, I think, I guess the main thing that sticks out and certainly the one thing that I've applied within my business and my brand is that I'm not really interested in producing everything for everyone. So if you think about most producers right across the country, most producers have got, maybe a sparkling and a rosé and then a few different varieties of white and a few different varieties of red, maybe even some fortifieds. And it's really about sort of covering all their bases from a commercial point of view.
Yep.
I kind of like the fact that in the Hunter Valley there's 120-odd producers up here.
Yep.
120 brands anyway.
Yep.
And I think still to this day I'm the only one that solely specialises in Semillon and Shiraz, our signature varieties of the region. And, those two varieties have stood the test of time, have been made here in the Hunter Valley for, over 100 years. And time again, you can see it in the results of our local regional wine show.
Yeah.
They're the varieties that really sort of stand up and make themselves, known as best suited to what we do here in the region. So
that's a pretty bold decision to make, isn't it, I suppose, when you first start out?
They're not, Hunter Semillon and Hunter Shiraz are possibly, I'm realistic. They're probably not the sexiest varieties out there in the marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm doing my darndest to make them a bit more sexy.
Yes. Yeah, well, it seems every second wine now has to have the cool climate moniker in front of it. And I find maybe some judges and some sommeliers taste wines from warmer climates and different climates with a cool climate bias palate at times.
Yes, there's always, direction and trends within the wine industry and the market. That are buying all those wines, and certainly cool climate is certainly popular in certain markets at the moment. As are these, I don't really like calling them natural wines, but the feral wine movement. The skin contact of whites and all those kind of wines are all the rage at the moment, particularly up here in Sydney. But
that would suggest they might be the rage at the moment, but their longevity might be a bit questioned. In a decade or two, those wines might be just mere conversation pieces.
Exactly. I think a lot of them in a year or two, basically, if they haven't been drunk, they're probably not going to be looking particularly attractive. So, and as a result of that, a lot of people jump on the bandwagon and are trying to produce a lot of those styles to meet what the market is looking for, but I certainly do take a long-term approach. Skin contact whites is a particular hate of mine. There's certain varieties if they're done well, I can see the merit.
Yes.
But, within my own winemaking.
Yep.
Particularly with Hunter Valley Semillon, it's basically the antithesis of those styles. I'm actually trying to absolutely minimise my skin contact and minimise the phenolic pickup in those wines because that's what that style is all about. It's delicacy and purity and skin contact and all the sort of the winemaking tricks that you can use to make other varieties, inverted commas, more interesting, just don't seem to work that well with Hunter Semillon.
Now, tell me, what's a McLaren Vale boy doing up in the Hunter? Tell us a little bit about your wine. Why the Hunter?
Yeah, it's a funny one. As you know, I grew up in McLaren Vale.
Well, your father was a famous winemaker, wasn't it, Wayne?
Yes.
In McLaren Vale, he made wines for... who did he make it for?
Oh, look, he started working in the Barossa with Peter Lehman.
Yep.
And then moved to McLaren Vale and was working for a number of years at Ryecroft.
Oh, yes, that's right.
And then worked for Steve McGlurry for a while, and then he set up his own label in 75. So, yeah, I kind of grew up around wines and vines, and when I finished school, did my degree at Roseworthy. And
what's the old Roseworthy before it became the Wake campus?
Yep. It's all done at Adelaide Uni.
And who was in your year of graduation at Roseworthy?
Dean Hewitson.
Oh, yes. Yep.
He's a good mate of mine. I was caught up in a couple of weeks ago, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Rob Dolan.
Oh, yes. Yep.
Who else? Peter Gambetta, who's now working at Yolumba. A few others, I think. Dean and I are the only ones that... Paddy Borthwick, he's got his own label over in New Zealand now.
Oh, right. So why the Hunter?
Well, in your last year at studies, you'd go out and you do a vintage out in the industry and get a bit of experience and you know, have to write a big report on it.
Yep.
As part of that was the sort of the first semester of our last year. And I actually did two. I came up and did a vintage at with John Cassegrain up at Port Macquarie.
Oh, yes.
First up, and that was 1986.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a whole heap of rain coming, and you may know that John was a former Tyrrells winemaker.
Mm. Well, you spent a lot of time at Tyrrells,
Yes. Yeah. And and Murray Tyrrell actually rang John to find out whether he had any sort of spare staff he could send down, because they wanted to get a whole heap of grapes in really quickly before this rain came. And John told him that he had me there, and Murray knew my father, and he said, "Oh, that's great, send him down." So I went down for a couple of weeks to Tyrrells and worked my ass off. And later on that year, as so happens, one of the assistant winemakers had moved on somewhere else, and they rang me up and offered me a job.
Mm-hmm.
So I moved to the Hunter basically, just after New Year. At the end of that year, so January 87, I moved up for my first vintage. And I kind of only expected to stay I didn't really have an idea, but you know, I didn't see it as a long-term career choice. So I just saw a great opportunity to work under the master Murray Tyrrell for a few years, two or three years, and then I'd probably head back to South Australia. And next thing I knew, I looked at my watch 13 years later and I was still there.
Right, yeah.
And at that time, obviously, I'd realised that I'd sort of got my head around the Hunter Valley and loved the area, loved the wines, particularly our Semillon and Shiraz. I guess it's no different to a lot of wine regions. It's the community in most wine regions is obviously rural, but all the wine producers are very close. And I think out of all the wine regions that I've worked in or visited over my life, the Hunter Valley just has this amazing sense of community.
Yeah,
we do it tough a lot of years, and we're all in competition with each other, but we also all work very, very closely together.
Yes.
And that's obviously one of the things that really attracted me to this region. And there's a lot of people that have sort of come into the region with the same idea as me, like, a couple of years and see how it goes, and have just ended up staying here.
Now, I suppose of all the things, it's pretty good that you had someone like Murray Tyrrell to work with. What was the sort of one thing that stands out that you may have learned from him? Patience? Because he was a very patient man, wasn't he?
Oh, I wouldn't describe Murray as patient. God bless his soul. He was an amazing man. He had this this real thick sense. I mean, if something was going to go wrong, he just happened to be sort of stumbling upon it just as it was happening. And I think the one, if I had to sort of summarise, all the amazing things that I've sort of picked up along over the years from Murray, and not just Murray, I mean, his son Bruce is now the Norman, and Andrew Spinozzi, who was the chief wine, senior winemaker all the time I was there. The whole business really, if you had to summarise it, works on the mindset of attention to detail.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, I think that if you want to be successful in any business, be it wine making or finance or whatever industry, and attention to detail applies to anything, but
yep.
That's one thing that really hit home to me, and that's something that I've taken through into my own business over the years too. And, you know, my little favourite saying within my business is yep. The little 1%ers make a big difference.
Yes, I wish you'd come down to my football club here in Melbourne, the Melbourne Footy Club, and say that. But incidentally, Tyrrells has got a long association with Melbourne. I didn't realise that until recently.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've always thought of Tyrrells as a New South Wales brand, but they would claim they're more national these days.
Absolutely. And yeah. Just I'm a Swans fan, by the way.
Yes, I realise that. Yes, we won't talk about last year's grand final. We'll move on from there.
Absolutely.
But... Now, these days, winemakers, of course, work, there's flying winemakers, they go all over the place to make, and you've worked in, I think, the Sonoma in the US, you've worked in Tuscany and Piedmont, and in Provence and France. Collectively, you know, what do you think those experiences taught you, you know, working in so many different environments?
Look, it's... Obviously, I guess my when I decided that I was going to make the hunt my home, my winemaking experience across various regions was obviously reasonably limited. So it was A, fantastic to do that travelling and
yep.
You know, see these wonderful places, but B, just to get an idea of you know, get an insight onto what. These great producers are doing with other varieties in other regions across the world.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the focus, I worked at a place called Simi in Sonoma.
Yep.
Their, Zilma Long was there back in those days, and their focus was very much on Chardonnay. And,
yep.
You know, she sort of pioneered the oxidative approach to,
yep.
To making Chardonnay. I worked for Antinori in Italy, you know, very large...
Mm.
Historic family.
Oh, royalty, Italian royalty in wine terms.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that was more of an observation thing. I kind of worked, but we had one of their young winemakers come over and work at Tyrrells for a vintage the year before, so this was
yep.
Kind of a return visit. So I was based in Tuscany, but probably the most eye-opening part of that trip for me was they'd recently in the previous year or two bought Prenotto
mm-hmm.
up in Piedmont
mm-hmm.
and they sent me up there for a couple of weeks and I just thought that was fantastic. Just, those wonderful Nebbiolos.
Oh, the Barolo. Oh, yes.
Such wonderful
yeah.
people.
Yeah, yeah.
It was so good. And then Provence was a lot of fun. I was employed by a UK negotiant to go into a chateau that had been run down and shut down for... a number of years, and they'd bought this place and wanted to get it up and running again. So I went in there as sort of a contract vintage winemaker,
mm-hmm.
All reds, mostly Cabernet and Cabernet Franc.
Yep.
Merlot, we made a heap of rosé.
Yep.
And
rosé's really come into its own at last, hasn't it?
What's that, sorry?
Rosé has come into its own at last
absolutely.
In Australia. It took a long while to be accepted, but...
Well, I think people are producing more serious rosés.
Yeah,
now.
Exactly.
I mean, those
yeah.
rosés from Provence are fantastic. You know,
yeah.
They're dry.
Yeah.
And they're not, you know, those sort of cherry cheer, raspberry cordial, you know, fruit bomb.
Yeah, I had a rose Kentish one from, you know, Rose Kentish from Ellathorne. And,
yes.
Yeah, she made, had some of her Provence rosé. It was magnificent. Yeah. Magnificent.
Yeah, and the Australians are obviously starting to make you know, those drier. Sort of,
yeah.
Know, sort of salmon-coloured, more serious rosés, and they're fantastic.
Yeah. Now for your wine of the week. Take me through, I suppose, if you were to have one of your wines as wine of the week, would it be your iconic Kiss Shiraz or maybe the Motel Block Shiraz in the vineyard that was planted by the famous Johnny Walker? That must have been way back in 66, 67, wouldn't it have been?
That was planted, yeah.
Mm. Which one? Mm.
I don't have any Motel Block coming up soon, so
right.
I guess I would need to talk about my Kiss Shiraz, and in fact...
Well, take us through that. Mm.
So my current, basically all my single vineyard reds have sold out, but my 2013 reds are due for release in May. In fact, I might even bring it forward a month into April.
Yep.
So it's only 6 weeks away.
Yep.
And there's six wines in that range, 2013 Shiraz.
Yep.
And at the top, the very top of that list is, as you just before, my Kiss Shiraz. Comes from a vineyard planted in 69. What's that, 46 years old now? For those of you, your listeners that know the Hunter Valley, and you know, that's a big part of bottling these single vineyard wines, having a like a sense of place.
Yes.
The vineyard is directly opposite Cypress Lakes, one of the three fantastic golf courses.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yep.
It's diagonally opposite Broken Woods Graveyard, and this is what
points
to that vineyard in the first place.
Yep, yep.
Pretty tough country through there. There's, you know, it's loamy clay, and there's a bit of a clay plant underneath. And that combined with the age of the vineyards, they're quite naturally low cropping, as
yes.
Broken Woods Graveyard, obviously.
Yep.
So we're yielding, you know, generally between 1 and 1.5 tonnes per acre. And in fact, if in the years where they punch out a slightly higher crop, it looks like it's sort of heading towards 2, we may even go out and thin some of the fruit out to get it back down to that level where we're getting a lovely intensity and concentration of fruit from these wonderful old vines.
Yep, yep.
The fruit comes into the winery. We, in fact, we literally picked our 2015 Kiss Shiraz yesterday.
Oh, right. Yep.
And it looks fantastic. 13.5 Beaumet.
Yes.
I guess what I should point out first, and I'm assuming most of your listeners are reasonably wine savvy, is the Hunter Valley produces a particular style of Shiraz, which you can't really pigeonhole because, you know, there's a spectrum, but we certainly don't produce the big, you know, Dolly Parton, fruit bomb, high alcohol, high octane wines of South Australia. Nor do we produce the you know, the sort of the more elegant, meaty bodied, spicy Shiraz of, you know, some of the cooler climate regions of Victoria. Hunter Valley, I hate doing this, but it's you know, making European comparisons. But Hunter Valley Shiraz is very much in the medium bodied spectrum.
Yes,
and
yes,
it's structurally it's quite savoury. You know, it doesn't have those sort of really sort of sweet berry tones. It's a lovely savoury character. So it is kind of more European in style than you know, the sort of what overseas people would typically regard as, you know, the Aussie fruit bomb style.
And the modern day Hunter Valley Shiraz is just eons away from the Shiraz of, you know, 30 or 40 years ago, when the, you know, the sweaty saddle, all the problems with Brett have been fixed.
Absolutely.
And I think people should realise, and I was blown away, but at tasting that where we met.
Yes.
Because I had to reintroduce my palate to, because I've been around a few years, having drunk many an old Hunter Shiraz, some of which, you know, weren't too bad either. But the new breed of Hunter Shiraz is just, you know, pretty stunning, I think.
Oh, Michael, you nailed it. It's, the
blew me away.
Sorry?
It blew me away,
Yeah, the contemporary style of Hunter Shiraz is miles away from what your listeners may expect. With
and
Hunter,
I think
Shiraz,
that's a very important point, isn't it, to make?
Yeah,
so when you're thinking...
You know, everywhere we go, whether I'm doing something, you know, promoting my own wines, or, you know, there's a group of Hunter winemakers doing some collective promotion, but this is a point that we take with us everywhere we go. And, you know, that character of, you know, that sweaty saddle character you mentioned before, that people historically have regarded as regional, you know, hunter character, really, at the end of the day, was just sloppy winemaking. Wines matured in tin sheds under hot roofs and you know, lacking that attention to detail. And the wines were basically affected by that spoilage yeast called Brettanomyces. Certainly, in the last 8 to 10 years, we as a region have collectively addressed that problem.
Have you ever? And there's a group of you now, isn't it? There's not just you, but you all fire off one another. There's a lot of people making good wines up there that really need to be reintroduced to the market. It's not just yourself. There's a whole collective of you, isn't there?
Yep. No, so, you know, individually, you know, we're all trying to get our message out there, but collectively our message is much stronger.
Yeah.
And, you know, I could reel off a heap of names.
Reel off some, just so people can, you know.
Well, you know, I'd like to mention Tyrrell, just like first up, because the reds that the Tyrrells are producing these days are absolutely outstanding. In fact, they're so much better than the reds that I was making when I was there.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable because, you know, back when I, those days, I didn't, I saw a character in a lot of these wines and I could see a difference between the wines that I'd mature in newer barrels.
Yep.
And wines that would mature in a lot of these old, you know, barrels that are 50 years old. And I remember describing it as old cask character.
Yes, yes.
And little or none at the time, but obviously now we know, it was basically Brettanomyces. And, and so, you know, Tyrrell's, the whole region's cleaned up their act. And you know, Tyrrell's, their wines are fantastic. A good mate of mine, Mike Julius.
Mm-hmm. His
are just outstanding.
Yes. Yes, he was at the tasting I was at.
You've got Hart and, you know, some newer, you know, you've got First Creek, a big contract winemaking facility up here who've got their own brand. You've got Hart and Hunter, you've got Gundog, you've got Andrew Margan and David Hawk and all of these. You know, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. But I can say that, you know, 90% of the Hunter Valley producers have jumped on board this initiative that we've created, and the reds are just so much better than they used to be.
And all we need now is, we're getting running out of time, but we need a few more people to recognise and drink a bit more Semillon, because marvellous wine, and it's a pity that it just doesn't get a wider audience.
Yeah, look, there's a groundswell out there.
Certainly,
I think one of the problems with Hunter Semillon historically has been that they've been made in a certain particular style that really needs bottle aging.
Yeah.
You know, the wines were so lean and austere as young wines that and so sort of heinously acidic that they needed time in bottle just to sort of settle down and actually grow some you know, bottle-aged character.
Andrew, we're out of time.
Oh, really?
I'm sorry.
We only just got started.
I know. We'll have to come back. You'll have to visit us again. Look, thanks for your time today, and look forward to talking to you in the future and touching base.
Absolutely. Thanks very much.
Well, that's about your lot for now. My research material is sourced from my home library, winebiz.com, Andrew Thomas Wines. This has been another Heard It Through the Grapevine on Vision Australia Radio. Heard on all stations around Australia via the Community Radio Network. It's cheers from me, Michael Hintz, and please drink moderately.